That Great Business Show, Ireland's best business podcast.
Welcome to episode 158 of That Great Business Show, where we bring you more great tips, insights, and unique business opportunities on every episode, all delivered in a commute-friendly package. And all thanks to daft.ie. I'm Conal O'Moran, Fuentester. As always, a bit of housekeeping to start. We're delighted that we're double nominees for the Irish Podcast Awards, Best Business Podcast and Best Interview Podcast, We Try Harder. And speaking of, a huge reaction to the interviews with Paraguay's number one banker, Conor McEnroy, on episodes 156 and 157, where Conor revealed great business opportunities in his adopted home of Paraguay, where he is our honorary consul, with loads of whiskey companies on to us, because he said, whiskey companies come to Paraguay. And as always, we remind all businesses in Ireland to get off the island, as we back Irish companies with worldwide ambitions. So why not check out Paraguay? And on that note, we're heading to Connecticut and New York, where we continue to make connections for Irish companies wanting to base themselves there to take on the North American market. On episode 132, Meathman, now based in Connecticut, Tony Sheridan, told us about the business center he was planning in the city of New London in Connecticut, where he was offering Irish companies mates rates. Now, don't tell the Connecticutans of what a mates rate is, but Tony will look after you. And that centre is now open, and Tony is waiting for your call. And Aer Lingus now flies Dublin-Hartford direct to make your US commute totally seamless. All our tips and insights are brought to you thanks to daft.ie, Ireland's number one property website, the best place to buy or sell your home in Ireland.
If it's for sale, it's on daft.ie, Ireland's number one property website. Whether you're looking for your first home or planning your next move, make sure you're on daft.ie, the best place to buy or sell in Ireland.
Travel to Connecticut, USA with Aer Lingus service to Bradley International Airport. With daily flights from Dublin to Hartford, we make business travel to Connecticut easy. Save time with US pre-clearance, enjoy Aer Lingus award-winning flight service, and experience the convenience of Bradley International Airport, perfectly situated for your travel needs. Learn more and plan your next business trip at AerLingus.com.
I would say that we're probably the world's only business podcast that quotes Chinese philosophers like Lao Tzu, the man who said, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step. He wasn't wrong, of course, because you won't get anywhere unless you start that journey. So if you're planning on being the next Guinness, Red Bull or McDonald's, you have to make a start. And where better to make that start than at the first open plan, shared commercial kitchen at the Spade Enterprise Centre in Dublin 7. Where they have room for 24 businesses wanting to take on the world. It's the only one like it in the country, but it could and should be replicated elsewhere. Co-funded by Enterprise Ireland, Dublin City Council and Spade, the facility has cost in the region of €3 million. The CEO is Bernie Everard, and one of the early participants is Brazilian native Adriana Cosenza Noves, who, along with husband Marcelo, produce Lebanese food under the Zaira brand. So let me start by wishing you a Céad Míle Fáilte to Ireland, Adriana. And welcome also to you, Bernie Everard, to That Great Business Show. Bit of a long lead-in, but it was worth it. Bernie, the world wants to know what is, and I'll read it out again, the first open plan shared commercial kitchen at the Spade Enterprise Centre. What is it?
Well, it's a brand new kitchen space with state-of-the-art facilities that'll be home to Ireland's newest incubating food entrepreneurs. It's based in North King Street, 6,500 square feet in space.
Is that a lot?
It is a fair amount. It includes storage. So each food producer becomes a member of Spade. That allows them to store their dry goods, chill goods and frozen product in the downstairs facility. And then upstairs, we have state-of-the-art kitchen equipment for them to use.
And that storage, because I've learned over the years a lot about the whole startup in food, is hugely important because you produce.
And then you don't put it in the back of the car and bring it home again. You have to distribute, which is, for anybody getting into the food industry, making it is easy. Yeah. Distribution is the curse.
Absolutely. In fairness, all of the business elements are the hard bit for food entrepreneurs. They all have the passion to make the food. They're amazing cooks, but it's the marketing, the finance, the packaging, the food regulations. And as Adriana well knows, that's the challenging bit. So Spade is there to mentor and support these food entrepreneurs on their journey. So we'll hold their hand. We'll help them navigate the agencies, all of the supports through the local enterprise office, the Dublin Food Chain. And when they're ready and they've built their business, they can fly the nest and go to their own door kitchen.
Ah, now how long do they stay with you before they fly the coop?
Well, it's case by case basis, but we do see 12 to 24 months for incubating startups. We're not just going to cut them loose when it's too soon.
And to join Spade costs 50 quid down money. And then is it how much a week or a month? After that?
It's 50 euros a month membership, and that gives you all of the value added services that we'll provide. And it's 12 euros an hour to hire the table in the kitchen, and you can use everything. So we're really reducing the barriers to entry for food business. No investment.
Fantastic idea. It is. Yeah. Is it other areas that sometimes call a dark kitchen or something, is it?
It's slightly different because dark kitchens are generally used by well-established businesses. So our remit is for startups. That's the number one criteria.
24-hour day?
Unfortunately, we didn't get planning permission from Dublin City Council for 24 hours a day, but we hope to move to that. So we're 6 in the morning to 9 at night.
Okay, that'll do you for
a while. We're in a residential area.
Yeah, but on the other hand, every residential area has either Deliveroo's coming or they're cooking themselves. And first thing in the morning, last thing at night, people making their breakfast and dinners and teas and everything else.
For bakers, they like to come in at 3 o'clock, so we might have a challenge there. But I think we'll get it over the line at some point.
Adriana, you have been here 6 short years. Yeah. Have you got used to the weather yet?
Yes, I am actually. Like, the winter time is the hardest.
Yeah, but it's always winter.
Yeah, I know. Especially the summer, because it's our winter in Brazil. It's so alike.
But summer and winter in Ireland are very similar. So, so get used to it, as they say.
Yeah, but the darkness is that's the hardest part. But otherwise, it's okay. It's good.
Yeah,
I feel embraced here. Your Irish people are very good. Thank you.
Well, you're very welcome. Thanks for coming over.
Yeah.
And you are producing a Lebanese food. Why Lebanese?
Because we are raised around these people. Like, the Lebanese community in Brazil is even bigger than Lebanon itself. We have more than 10 million Lebanese descendants in Brazil.
Have you?
Yeah. So it's
every
huge.
Every day is a school day. I did not know that. And how come the Lebanese ended up in Brazil?
Oh, I think the war and
the explorers.
So they're actually recently arrived. Like, you want to say war?
No. A long, long time ago, they are there. Like, I would say my ancestors. We have the Italian citizenship as well. And we know for sure that Italy was invaded by Lebanese and Arabic people as well. So we actually don't know, but it's a long time. I would say more than 100 years, I would say, they're there.
And so you came to Ireland and decided when or how that you wanted to start
making food. Like, when
I love these stories.
Yeah, when we are planning to move abroad, making food as we are doing at home, it was always a passion. But my background and my husband's background, we are from marketing communications. We've been working this field in Brazil for more than 25 years. And as soon as we landed, we thought, okay, let's go. Let's try to be back. But we wasn't sure. And then to improve our English, we start working as a catering in a company. And then we developed the English and we knew that, okay, that's it that we want to do. And the pandemic hit. We had to be at home for a while. And then we increased our studies. We said, okay, let's do something. Why Lebanese? Because we are completely in love about this food. We are raised around these people. We study it about. And here you go. Here we are.
And what is the ambition?
Oh, gosh. Probably to go to Portugal as well, because we know Portuguese people love different food, not only theirs. Grow here in Ireland, of course. We want Irish people to try because we know they like this kind of food as well. So we want you and other people have a twist. Our twist is a bit different from the other restaurants that you have.
What is that twist?
It's the Brazilian twist because, for example, there is a dish called kibbe, which the main Lebanese cuisine here, they made with lamb. Ours is with beef. So it's kind of different. And our season, the way that we prepare, the way that we do make the stuff.
What are the challenges? And there are, I know, so many. With a small, tiny company. I should, of course, say that Marcelo is also sitting in the studio here. He's very quiet. Yeah. But he is here. And he's a big lad, so he's, I'm not going to say anything that naughty or nasty about him. What are the big challenges for the pair of you to start up? How long have you been in startup mode?
2 years now. I would say the place, like the kitchen, because I was just chatting with Bernie saying that if the shared kitchen was ready a year ago, probably I was there. Because like we started cooking at home, then we went for a shared kitchen, but it didn't work well because like it wasn't.
I'm not a cook, so at least I am a cook, but I'm not a professional cook. Tell us, what are the difficulties in a shared kitchen?
In my kitchen now, I have my own stuff, my own equipment. I can bring everything that I need, leave it there. From there, I deliver. From there, it's mine. I settle the way that I need to build my products or develop as another one. In a shared kitchen, even though you have in spade, you have everything that you need because it's brilliant, but it's not yours. It's not developed for you, for your product, but still, for a start, it's everything that you need.
So, challenges. What are the big challenges?
For us, it was to find a place. Because thanks God, I had Bernie at the time and I had Leo with us.
Which Leo?
We start in Fingal and now we are in Dublin City Centre. But they guide us completely. Also, Dublin Food Chain, we did some courses through them and we learn a lot because it's all new for us.
I'm not familiar with Dublin Food Chain. Who are they?
Dublin Food Chain are an organization run by James Birkin Associates. So they bring together early stage startups in the Dublin area and bring them on the journey. And they deliver a lot of the courses for the local enterprise office, actually nationwide. So there's a food starter program. Yeah. Then you progress to the food academy program if you want to sell into Super Value.
Ah.
You learn so much.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's bringing your product to retail. Really,
yeah.
That's the journey.
And we had Brian Donaldson of Maxol on because they are also doing the same thing. It's a brilliant idea. I
wasn't aware of that initiative till I listened to that podcast.
Bernie,
very interesting.
I love you.
Yeah.
And that is it. And there are those, like those little gems.
Yeah.
And that is why when we're having you on, Bernie, is to find out these gems that Adriana is using to see, you know, the ecosystem. It just needs that encouragement, isn't it?
There's a lot of organizations and companies like ourselves working in silos. So now it's about joining the dots and creating the ecosystem. And the center of that ecosystem will be in Spade Enterprise Center in Dublin 7.
Yeah.
Well, that's a beginning. But I did say at my intro that other areas, I mean, the Northwest and Southwest, we should all have one of these.
Absolutely.
And
they
are a brilliant idea. Now, back, Adriana, to you and about this thing about the per hour. Does that work for you well? The cost per hour? Can you, this is a leading question. Do you take shortcuts to make sure that you don't use up your hours? Do you try to sneak?
Yes. In the beginning, it worked perfectly for us because we didn't have the full clients. We didn't, by the time we wasn't selected for Food Academy, which we were. And then, like, it's super good when you were starting your business, you could know, your product, your customers, your finances, you could, how can I say this?
Concentrate on those
goods. And also, you can, estrutura? You can build yourself better. You can build your business better when you are doing in step by step.
Of course.
Yeah. And then that's, for me, that's one of the best things.
And therefore, what is the big thing now for you next step? Because did you say you're on the Food Academy now or?
Yes, because we lost the premise last year and we took 2 or 3 months to get back to Spade. Bernie guided us on building our business plan with Leo. I have a very good mentor, Alison Coombs. She's brilliant as well with James Burke and all these people. But my biggest challenge now is go to Super Value and Brazilian supermarkets and see Irish people buying my food. try my food.
Brazilian supermarkets, how many of those are there? I know there's one up on, I can't remember now, but anyway, I think
around six.
Are there really?
Yeah. Because as Brazilian Embassy is now running...
Chamber of Commerce,
yeah. But also they are running now my research or marketing research to know the Brazilian community, but it's huge. It's more than 70,000 people in Ireland nowadays. Yeah.
Well, welcome to 70,000 Brazilians. That's what I say.
Yeah. So then,
and what is the Brazilian? This is all of this. I'm learning. Oh. 70,000. What is the Brazilian embassy doing? They're trying to find out what?
They are trying to find who are they, what they're doing, because the first wave of Brazilians that moved to Ireland were mostly workers with meat.
The beef industry, they were butchering and stuff. Yeah. Remember that?
Yeah. And then the second one were students. And then together, families like myself and Marcelo, because we have the Italian citizenship, so we didn't want to be in Brazil anymore. And then we choose Ireland.
Over Italy?
Yes.
Are you mad?
No. No, because here we could start a new business, a new life, give English to my daughter. It's a lovely country anyways.
Okay, well, we'll agree on that one.
Yeah. Okay.
So back to the distribution. You've got your six Brazilian supermarkets.
Yeah.
And you're now, where are you with Supervalue?
We are just finalizing, because there is a huge process to be ready to go to Supervalue, like from HSE perspective, barcodes, everything. That there is a process. We are there because...
Not what you were thinking when you start cooking, is it? That you have to start talking about barcodes and distribution.
Not at all.
And the big challenge are the margins.
Yeah.
Especially for a small producer.
Exactly.
It's all about the margins.
Yeah.
And it's about the margin for Supervalue as well, obviously.
And of course for Adriana.
Yes.
And Marcelo.
Yes. Now, when I started cooking, we used to say that if we didn't need the money to pay our bills and to have the business and all that stuff, everything that we want to hear, you were a cooker, you know yourself, it's they love our food. Oh, I love your food. It's when they feel embraced, when they feel back home or trying something different. But the challenge is Supervalue, Brazilian markets, and Irish people to have my food at home.
Well, back to Supervalue, because another issue with them is that they're huge.
Yeah.
And to supply them, now you don't have to supply them all at the one go, is that right? No. So do you choose 6, 10 or 20 or 30 outlets?
Yeah, at least 5. Mm-hmm. We have to go for research and see which store would be the best fit for the product. And then we negotiate with each store and then we start supplying them step by step. Even Supervalue, they are very good on that. They don't want us, small as we are, to start supplying loads of things and then don't sell. And they want the chain works perfectly. So that's the main thing. So that's why they teach us a lot.
A philosophical question for you. Are you a Lebanese food, a Brazilian food, an Irish food, or... Where do you want to position your brand?
Lebanese food.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because
from Brazil, with a bit of Italian.
Yeah. Because Brazilian food is more than Lebanese. Lebanese is just the twist, the seasoning, the way that we make, it's the Brazilian. But Brazilian food, there's so many things. There's so many other different dishes that we don't want to go in there. So it's not where we want to go.
Bernie, how many vacancies have you got? What kind of companies are you looking for? What should they be producing? And then my favourite question is, what do you not want to see?
There's nothing specific we don't want to see. We haven't...
Somebody else has cupcakes or something, you know, Mrs. Murphy's barn brack.
Well, look, everyone has a USP. So that barn brack is special to them and they're probably making it with some unique recipe. But we have noticed that our pipeline, the people looking to come into our shared kitchen, 70% of those are not Irish. So it's really exciting.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it's actually, I can't wait for the smells and the flavours of that kitchen. We have our first new client in today. So she's West African. Her name is Lamy's Kitchen. So she's making her product away there today. So we've had South American barbecue, Peruvian, Indian, Chinese, So it's endless, and more Brazilian products as well.
That is fantastic. Yeah. So when you reach, and you will of course reach your quota, what do you do?
When we reach the quota, well,
when you're full.
Well, it's constant churn because
If they're going to stay with you a year or 2 years, there will come a point where there won't be any churn. And you'll try to keep them there. Try to keep them to yourself.
No, we have 15 owned or kitchen units in Spade that are bigger. They range from 500 square foot to 1,500. So we hope the people in those units scale and move out, leaving space for the incubating startups in the shared kitchen. So it's a kind of a rolling churn.
How do you choose the early starters? Do you kind of do a little taste test yourself? Or,
to be honest, not taste test, but we get them to do a very small business profile, and it's about the people behind the business as well, and if they want to be part of the community, because we're very focused on community in Spade. So really, yeah, we screen them, we meet them, we talk to them on the phone, we bring them in, we let them see Spade as well, and it has to be a good fit for everybody.
And when you say part of the community, are you talking about the Dublin 7 community or your Spade community or...
Well, you could say both, actually, but yeah. I suppose I'm talking about the Spade community in terms of networking, knowledge sharing, support. I mean, Adriana would know we run network events, which brings all of the Spade producers together. And that's where the magic happens. They're busy working in their kitchens. They mightn't see each other. So when they're in a room together, that's for me, I just stand and watch the interaction. For me, that's the best part of this job.
And when I say the best part is the tasting. The tasting, yeah.
Absolutely.
And they're bringing you homes on a Friday evening or something like that.
In fairness, yeah. And look, many times on a Friday evening, I will get Adriana's takeaway and bring it home the train and drive all the other commuters mad because the smell is coming out of my bag. But it's a really nice Friday treat.
What is the long-term outlook for that? Because I presume at some stage, as I say, I'm positive you'll fill.
Yeah.
What's the ambition? Do you want to see a world brand or?
Well, I suppose we work very closely with the local enterprise office and the local and Enterprise Ireland. So we are always on the lookout for the rising stars, the ones to watch.
Have you seen any?
We have a few in Spade. Yes, we have. Yes.
Would Zaire be one of those?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
She has to say that. You see the way I made her say that?
And I'm very excited for them to go into retail because I think more Irish people need to know about their brand. It's really hard for a business like Adriana's to get the word out there.
And
the Brazilian
so
community will know, but for Irish people to taste it, they'll just love it.
But again, I've had so many early stage food producers on the podcast that I know things like, you, Adriana, you love cooking, but are you happy to go and stand in a Super Value for 6 hours doing taste test, then back to the kitchen, then find out that the distribution didn't go out to somewhere down in, I don't know, Clonskea or somewhere, and then back? It's very, very difficult.
Yeah, it is very difficult. It is very hard, 12, 14 hours per day. And
is that what you work,
Yeah, like sometimes you are managing financials, sometimes you are managing marketing communications. Oh, by the way, Thais, I love you. You are the best from traffic media, our social media. She's brilliant. She's doing an amazing job. And there's so many plates in your hands, like sometimes you don't know what to do. But I would like that because I want to see Irish trying my food. Like I have a few.
I think Irish people want to try your food as well.
Thank you.
I think getting much better. I mean, Bernie, you're like me, old enough to remember that. If it wasn't beef and two veg, nothing was happening. Nowadays, everything goes and the smell. I have to tell the truth here. There's a lovely smell of Lebanese food in the studio.
That's great. That's a good start.
We are on the podcast. We are Team GBS, That Great Business Show, the team, the people who come onto the podcast and the people who listen. And we put our arms around early stage companies, just like yours, Adriana.
Thank you.
In fact, both of you, what can Team GBS do to help both or either? Bernie, I'll start with you. What can we do to help?
Well, initially, we want to fill our 24 slots. So for anyone out there listening that's thinking of starting a food business and doesn't know where to go or has a half an idea or is making it in their own kitchen, just drop us a line. We're on social media and, you know, delighted to meet and speak to everybody that would like our help.
And it's Spade, as in digging, as in trowel, as in whatever. We'll just call it Spade. But I'll find you on a website called Spade, will I?
Spade.ie.
Perfect. Yep. Okay, that's the easy part. Now, I did ask before about what you don't want. You didn't really answer that one because you're trying to be nice. But should people go through their Leo before they come to you?
Not necessarily. Either or. But I suppose no live animals, you know, no slaughtering. You know, there's a couple of no's.
No live animals. That made me think, what is she thinking?
Well, you know, if somebody wanted to make chicken soup and they came in with the chickens, to slaughter the chickens, that's a no. Dehydration of foods might be tricky also because of the time it takes and the odours that it might create that might impact on the other producers. But otherwise, we're open to what people want to make and then we can guide them.
Okay, Adriana, what would you like Team GBS to do for you? You are in touch, presumably, through the Brazilian network with the 70,000 Brazilians. It's not a bad start.
No, not at all.
And then you're in touch, obviously, with Super Value. They're going to help you. Now, there is a big, big, big number of listeners, not just in Ireland, right around the world for this podcast.
Oh.
What would you like them to do? They can't. You can't obviously ship your produce over to Paraguay yet. But sorry, I should have asked you as well. You mentioned Portugal. You're actually thinking of trying to get into Portugal already.
Not already, but it's a dream.
Okay,
it's the big and huge step for a few years forward. But for now, I would love you to try my food and say what you think, honestly, because we would like to improve if we have to and say it is different. I never try. I have tried. I like or I don't. And of course, buy, because I'm here to sell. My business exists because I need to sell my products. But firstly, you have to try them.
Now, don't go through the entire menu, but round figures. What is the menu price point and what kind of products are we talking about?
We are talking about my bestseller product is called Sfiha, which is a flatbread with a minced beef topping or cheese topping that we made ourselves, even the ricotta and the blend of cheese and the season of the beef. And also the kibbe, which is kind of a minced beef tart with minced beef filling. It's super nice, it's baked, it's healthy. The kibbe with a salad, it's a very good dish. It's something that you could have for dinner, for lunch, or whatever. So even the Sfiha's children to take to school, it's really good option as well.
And price point in Super Value or similar, where are you? 5 euro, 6 euro, 10 euro?
I would say 5 to 6 for the Sfiha's and the kibbe a bit more because we know you're
bigger.
It's bigger and it's different. It's for, and also for events, for catering and sharing with friends. So.
And the brand is Zaira, Z-A-I-R-A.
Yes.
And when will you be in Super Value?
We don't know yet, but we will take a time. I'll come back to you and tell you.
I was going to say, when you do, tell us and
yes,
we will tell the world.
Yeah,
now, there's one final question that I know you've been told about. Mm-hmm. About who, Bernie, would you hire in a heartbeat?
Well, of course, I'd hire any of my three children. But outside of that, I think Jacinda Ardern.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd always looked up to her. I think I would love to hire her so I can learn about her empathetic leadership style. I think she's amazing. And she shows vulnerability. And she did an amazing job as the New Zealand Prime Minister.
Especially so she did, in fairness. And Adriana, who would you like to hire in a heartbeat?
Oh my God, I would hire
my daughter. Marcelo was looking at you.
Yes,
so you better say Marcelo.
Yeah, but he knows. I would hire my stepdaughter or is she my stepdaughter? No, what is she? Is she?
I don't know. I haven't met her.
She's your daughter.
No, she's she's my daughter, my oldest daughter. She's 28 and also my brother because we build this company together. My brother is in Brazil. She's here with us.
And is she working with you?
No, she's not. She's a psychologist, but she's a very focused. She's young. She's 28. We are in 50s, so it's different.
I have to think about that one. So you're hiring your own daughter?
Yeah.
Even though she's not going to work with you?
Yeah, definitely, because she will.
Okay. There's a bit of psychology in that, isn't there?
Yeah.
Please, please, please do come back when you first get into the
Super Value.
And also when you fill out or are trying to attract further people, Bernie, please come back to us as well, because you are now Team GBS members. Thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
That Great Business Show.
De facto,
The revolutionary shaving oil, changing the face of shaving. For the smoothest shave of your life, just add water. No more lathering up or cleaning up afterward. Just add a few drops of water and you're ready to go. Defacto's blend of all natural oils hydrates and protects your skin. No more razor burns or irritation. A spa treatment for your face. Perfect for all skin types and lasts so much longer than traditional foams or gels. Defacto, a shaving revolution. Just add water. Available from selected pharmacies and from defactoshave.com.
Are you buying or selling a home? If it's for sale, it's on daft.ie, Ireland's number one property website.
Travel to Connecticut, USA with Aer Lingus service to Bradley International Airport. With the daily flights from Dublin to Hartford, we make business travel to Connecticut easy. Save time with US pre-clearance, enjoy Aer Lingus award-winning flight service, and experience the convenience of Bradley International Airport, perfectly situated for your travel needs. Learn more and plan your next business trip at aerlingus.com.
All that great business show advertisers are Team GBS approved. Back them.
Staying in business is hard, but you already know that. Your number one priority is to make profit. And that's just to stay in business. Anything that eats into the profit could make your business untenable. Understandably, as our planet comes under massive environmental pressure, all businesses, big and small, have been asked to do their bit under ESG. Or environmental, social and governance. But that comes at a cost to a business, and recently you may have read that some larger businesses are pushing back, saying ESG cannot be a priority for them as they deal with the other negative macroeconomic issues. My next guest is Laura McDermott. She is founder of Collectivo, who says she started her sustainability journey whilst living with 11 nuns in rural Spain back in 2015, as you do. So we had to hear about that. But she's also big on ESG. She's come back to Ireland participating in the Back for Business program for returning immigrants who are early stage entrepreneurs, a program supported by the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade. Laura McDermott, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
11 nuns, rural Spain.
Yes.
How? Why? Who? What?
Well, I had been working for a couple of years in Bank of Ireland on some pretty cool fintech projects, and I received an email in from the School of English at Trinity, where I studied my undergrad, saying they were looking for people to go over for just a year, not a major commitment, to implement project-based learning in some secondary schools over,
in Spain. What does that mean, project-based learning?
So it's taking... Rather than our more traditional forms of education where you'd have a textbook and you'd be going through notes and I'm lecturing at you, project-based is we get a scenario where we get, you know, we hypothesize something and through the use of our skills in a practical way, we come out on the other end. So rather than, you know, us reading from a book, I'll set you a group project. And in your group project, you have to speak in English and you have a certain number of criteria that you have to hit. And then at the end, you'll come back and present that to me. So it would be based around the project that you'd actually be using those skills.
You were working in fintech. What have you got to know?
I know.
What to do?
I don't know.
With project-based learning in Spain with no Spanish, because you told me.
Yeah, I did tell you.
How did that all happen? Besides the invite.
It was, I mean, the
you
fact...
You obviously were very unhappy in Bank of Ireland.
No. Don't be getting me in trouble here now. I did have a great time. I had a fantastic time in Bank of Ireland and we were working a lot on design thinking. That was my first exposure to design thinking and working on challenges, which still permeates to this day a lot of the projects we work on. So I was facilitating a lot of workshops. We were bringing in a lot of different people and I love that collaborative working style anyway. And then I moved from this fintech project into something that was a bit more kind of structured and it was analysis role. And I just saw this email come in one day and I thought, that looks pretty cool. I'll just
do that
a year. YOLO.
A random email.
Yeah.
I love those stories because it can happen to you type of thing. Yeah,
I know.
And it did happen to you.
It did.
Off you go to Spain and then... You've come back because we better talk about Collectivo.
Yes.
But anyway, these ladies, the nuns, they got you into sustainability, did they?
So, yes. And also I had kind of had a plan for post-Spain, which was to go over to the States and work in CSR. I had set up a lot of different interviews and things. In the end, the visa didn't that didn't pan out, unfortunately. But I actually think that that was fantastic because during that entire year that I was in Cáceres, which was just shout out to the town that I was staying in with all of the nuns and Sor Alfonsa and Sor Socorro, I basically downloaded the whole reading list of an MBA that had a specialization in sustainability. So I went through textbook by textbook, all of the course readings in that year. I also learned from the nuns. And it's funny because when you don't have the language, because I didn't have any language going over, when you don't have the language to fall back on, you pick up on a lot of different things, you know, the energy and the giving back to the community. This was my first exposure to religion practice in a day-to-day context. And it was totally foreign to me. But at the same time, seeing the work that they had done in their communities and hearing about their stories of the missions that they had gone on and the schools that they had built and, you know, the education that they had brought around the world was really inspiring. So it was kind of a combination of all of the reading lists and the course structure of the MBA that I essentially robbed from the website. And then being in that environment that was very nurturing and caring led me to.
Now,
to
I have
next
never
steps.
Met you before, but I'm guessing, are you one of these bright kids?
I don't know about that.
I think you are.
I think luck goes a long way. I think taking chances.
Do you pick things up rather rapidly? Are you bright as bright? Did you get first class honours? Did you get 665 points or whatever
it is? I did not. No. And in my undergrad, I mean, I think studying English meant basically reading 5 or 6 novels a week and just a huge amount of critical theory. So you're looking at a book as an artifact that has multiple different dimensions, characters, thought patterns, mental models. There's also a socioeconomic context there. It's of the time, but then is it also separate from the author? So there's a whole, you're taking one thing and you're analysing it from a lot of different perspectives. So I guess I'm a little bit nerdy in that way. I don't know if I'm the brightest because there are definitely better students than me, though.
This is not the Great Business. Sorry, yes. This is the Great Business Show, not the Great Book Show.
Yes.
See what I did there?
Yes.
Oh, well, I made
a mess of it
as well. But anyway,
we'll bring it back.
Back to Colectivo.
Yes.
Who, what, when did you set up Colectivo?
Yeah, so Colectivo actually just turned one on the 16th of September. So we had a nice little reflective post there that we put out on LinkedIn. But yeah, it had been about a year and a half in the making. So we incorporated in Ireland in September 2022. The 6 months prior to that, I had been kind of connecting the dots to the point of incorporating. So I'd been talking with a lot of people who I'd worked on projects with. You know, there's a lot of our experts who are, you know, have their PhDs and have worked on huge sustainability projects under, you know, Horizon funds, using a lot of technology, innovation. So I identified, okay, these are really cool people and I would love to work with them on more projects. And I know that they'll get along well together. And I know that there's a huge amount of challenges to tackle. So why don't we join our forces and create this? So at that point, I was working in a fantastic job in IE Business School in Madrid. And I decided to jump in, set up Colectivo, and the rest is...
Shout out
to IE.
And to Mr. Haslam.
Is he
doctor or professor?
Yes.
Or
Mr. Joe Haslam. I don't know what acronym he has after his name.
He's a big supporter of this podcast.
Yeah.
So we have to give him a shout out.
Yeah.
And there was no connection. I did not know prior to this that you had that connection with him. So anyway.
And Joe has been a great mentor, actually. I want to make a shout out to him because I've been very, very lucky to have some really smart and clever people around me. And I've learned a lot from him and from them. And Joe is one of them.
So what does Colectivo do?
So in a nutshell, we help companies implement sustainability or we help them in their sustainability journey in a very practical way.
And what about these companies that are now saying can't afford it, won't do it?
Those are the companies that unfortunately I think are going to be left behind.
But these are the big companies. You saw it yourself. There's headlines in international newspaper, business finance papers saying just not happening this time. We'll do it in a few years' time.
Yeah. We also saw the Apple. Have you seen the Apple Mother Nature ad that came out recently?
No.
That was very good. That's worth checking out. Look, I think that with all of these things, there's always going to be multiple different arguments that will come in. We're in the business of trying to identify challenges and looking for solutions. So we can see very tangible challenges around climate change, around social issues and inequalities. Mary Robinson, I continue to return to this quote by her that says that we need to be doing 10 times more, 10 times faster. So the sooner we actually make the commitment and jump into tackling these issues, the better it will be all around. So that would be the approach that we would take.
And I saw in your briefing notes that you say that you can actually add to profitability.
Yes. Yeah.
Explain. Everybody wants more profits. And if you can do that for them, they'll love you.
Yeah. Well, actually, in a lot of ways, you know, when we are investing in, okay, so if we just kind of take a step back for a second, the first step is understanding what is your current situation. So that's an as is, understanding what is the as is, what is the current context? Do we need to adapt our products? Do we need to adapt our services? Do we need to adapt our operational model?
To what and for what? As in, what do you adapt it for? Like if I'm making, I'm just looking out of the corner of my eye here, light switches. What do you want to adapt them to do, to be? Is it to be bringing some form of greater sustainability, is it?
So if we were to look at a light switch, I would be asking, and I come from a design background, so I'd be asking, okay, well, what was the value chain that went into creating that light switch? Who were the people involved from the moment that those materials were extracted, maybe from the earth, until the point of it being sold in a store? And were all of those workers well looked after? Were those production and manufacturing processes green? And if so, great. Well, if they weren't optimal, what is it that we need to do in order to become best in class in that?
But one of the things there that you just touched on were the people who looked after those people who were in the manufacturing process.
Yes.
And it could be pay, because the world underpays a lot of people.
Yeah.
If we underpay people, products should be cheaper. And people aren't really interested in paying more for products, if you follow my circular argument there. So what are you going to do? Make things more expensive?
Not necessarily. We can also try to change behaviors so that people are buying less. I mean, it depends on the market that you're talking about. And I'm not an expert on light switches. Now, I'll be honest with you. I don't want to dig myself into a hole here. But there's a lot of movements around, you know, buy social, buy local. And the circular economy and all of the new policies that are coming in as well are really encouraging people to actually consume less, but consume responsibly. So it would be, for example, a false economy to buy lower quality materials or lower quality clothes instead of investing in longer lasting pieces.
Do you know that was the
pieces.
Argument always made to buy a Mercedes, even though they were three times the price of the other cars? And people would have loved to have bought Mercedes, but guess what? They couldn't.
Yeah.
But they were better made.
Yeah.
No?
And those are challenges that we have to tackle. And if I was to give you a, you know, single silver bullet response right now, I think I would be, you know, cheating and lying, because there is none. Every context, every organization, every system is different. And the first phase that we always undertake with our clients is understanding who are the stakeholders involved in this product, in this service, in this business, and what is their context and what can we do to try to change it.
And who calls you in? What types of companies are actually using Collectivo? See the way they got your name in there twice?
Yes, loving it. So we've had a few different companies at the moment. So we've had a couple of educational institutions from North America who've gotten in touch and have asked us to build awareness around ESG and sustainability and actually how to take action.
And I ask this question always of every company. How did the Americans find you? What did you use, or how did you get yourself in front of them, or where did it come from?
Do you know what? And it's probably bad for the customer feedback cycle. I didn't ask them how they found out. But
another random email, was it?
It was a random email, actually. Yeah. I don't know whether they picked us up on keywords, or we haven't actually put anything into Google keywords wise. So I think networking goes a long way. And I've always gotten any opportunity through networking. But with those education institutions, they were bringing over students to learn more about ESG and innovation. Students from business backgrounds, legal backgrounds, accounting backgrounds. We've also done a few corporate projects in Ireland. So one of those, for example, was working with Mason Hayes and Curran. They have a Green Month, which I think is very ambitious. And I think a lot of companies can learn from them, as opposed to just having a green week. They're going.
And what does a Green Month do, just as a matter of interest?
So they had a lot of different organizations that they collaborated with to essentially build visibility of sustainability best practices, you know, how to be more creative in the kitchen, I think was one of their activities. We came in and we had a knowledge sharing activity on how to lead a sustainable lifestyle and what are the realities of that.
So that's at the individual level, is it? Not at the corporate level. In other words, they are one of the leading law firms.
Mm.
Did you tell them how to be greener lawyers? You know.
Yeah.
So what does a greener lawyer do?
A greener lawyer? Well, it depends on the sector. I mean, buildings, you know, if you are working in a big company, you're going to need to start reporting on the energy efficiency and the consumption within that building. So creating new contracts around the built environment, your utilities, big infrastructure projects like renewable sources of energy. You could also look at green procurement. So that's another big thing. And especially for small businesses, small, medium businesses, although they mightn't be directly impacted by the sustainability reporting that is coming out. They will have to feed in, if they are suppliers to bigger organisations, they will have to start measuring their impact and reporting to those bigger clients that they have.
And normally, you know, most business owners are sound people and they will want to be greener. Mm. Does that mean more expensive?
Because not necessarily, no, not at all. I mean, if you want to invest a huge budget in it, you absolutely can. And Mason Hayes is a perfect example. I think they have donated 1.2 million over a number of years to Rethink, which is a fund set up to support social enterprises. So you can go big, but you can also, we have another software company that we're working at the moment, and they have digital products. So all of those digital products come with, you know, a carbon footprint. And if they have an app that requires 10 different screens to log on versus 5 different screens to log on, all of those extra screens, all of those extra clicks and seconds on an application contribute to your carbon footprint on a digital end. So it might actually be more efficient if they streamlined their applications and if they looked to make it, you know, lighter and more user-friendly, which would also reduce the amount of emissions or energy consumption they're looking at, and could also make it cheaper in some ways to have their technology set up in that way. That's an example from a digital product, which sometimes we forget about.
And I love that, because that is the truth and that is what's going to happen, I think, looking forward. You know, all these photographs, the millions, zillions, gazillions of photographs we take,
yeah,
they're stored somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that is gobbling up
and
juice.
And unsubscribing somewhere. To emails. Okay, I absolutely love, you know, receiving.
Unsubscribing, go ahead.
So when you have a list of, I mean, I go in every so often, my favorite thing to do on the bus is to go in and all of the places, all of the businesses that I don't actually engage with anymore who send me their newsletter, I unsubscribe, because all of those additional emails adds to an overall footprint as well. So I am subscribed to a few and I'm subscribed to yours, and I won't be unsubscribing anytime soon. But you know, you go to events,
yeah,
and you connect to the Wi-Fi, and then before you know it, you're on 15 different mailing lists, and all of those have an impact. So sometimes it can be a physical product that we're looking at and saying, okay, how can I make this t-shirt more eco-friendly? And sometimes it can be in the design of your communications with your customers.
That's a lovely example. There must be, and I know you told me that there aren't any easy fixes, but give me some easy fixes, will you? That's a lovely one. I like that one.
Yeah.
Anything else simple that people just could do, as you say, sitting in the bus or sitting watching TV or something, just unsubscribe, and you actually get a kind of a vicarious thrill out of that as well.
Yeah.
Well, got you back.
I mean, a lot of the things I think that have been great contributors to our growth in the economy over the last dozens of years, our consumption, our access to technology, to applications, it's been great in some ways. And then in other ways, it has led us to becoming maybe not as mindful as we should be of our own consumption. So I think simple things, first of all, when you're on the bus or the Lewis or whatever transport you're taking, it is great to delete some of those.
Not on a bike, bad idea.
Bike, not while you're on your bike.
You're on the bike.
No,
yeah.
Let's try to practice mindfulness when we're on the bikes. And we need more mindful cyclists around the place as well.
We certainly do.
Yeah, commuters
as in
general.
Be careful type of mindful.
Yes.
Anyway, sorry, we digress.
So that's one thing. I think another thing is, and I'm actually teaching a course at the moment on attention management for learning. So our attention.
I was very tempted to say, what did you say there? Sorry.
One of the activities that we do in that class is look at, I think the first thing in everything is awareness building, right? So if you can look at your phone and see how many hours a day, or your devices, how many hours a day do you spend on those devices? If you can bring down that number from 5 hours or 4 hours down to, you know, even, I don't know, reduce by 25%, that's going to have a saving as well of consumption, of energy consumption. So I think those are small things we can do. I think that we can also look at the types of apps that we're using. I'm a big fan of delivery apps, and I think that they can be fantastic as well, but they come with a lot of packaging. So there's actually a lot of startups now that are creating solutions around packaging and how we can reduce waste. When we get our, let's say, Deliveroo or Uber delivery, we can use that packaging and give it back to them, as opposed to just kind of taking in loads of plastic or loads of carton and then recycling it afterwards.
That all sounds pretty good. What can Team GBS, that is us, can we do for Colectivo? Who would you like as customers, or what do you want them to do? Or you've told us what we should be doing, just small things, but important things.
Yeah, I guess for yourselves or for us, it's always great to highlight companies that are designing things, you know, the right way, or that are investing in redesigns. a lot of the time it doesn't require reinventing the wheel. It requires asking the right questions. So what we would always do with our clients, you know, whether they be big or small, would be to really understand the challenge. So I think that with your team and when you're inviting guests on, it would be interesting to know about some good news stories or, you know, how they're tackling.
We'll always ask.
You always ask those questions.
Because
anyway,
we are positive, because we're in business and we think of the mind of the entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Now, you said small. How small is small for you?
I mean, we don't necessarily discriminate against sizes, because you can have very, very profitable companies that have just a couple of people working for them. So
they're my favorite.
Yeah. They're the cool ones. Although the big ones, I mean, ideally our prime customer segment are large businesses, okay, that have big impacts and that can both create positive impact and then have a negative impact if they're not conscientious in their operations and their designs. So bigger clients, yes, would be a focus for us. But the smaller clients, I mean, I think when smaller clients come to us with an ask, we always want to help them because they're aware of it, they're eager, and in a lot of ways, they're a lot more agile than the bigger companies.
But they can't pay. Well, and you're in business, always remember.
Yeah, we are in business. And we will, I mean, look, we'll try to get something off the ground for everybody. You know, we might
That's
be able
okay.
to invest a huge amount of people hours in something that has a small budget. But if we, you know, I have worked with small businesses recently that have had a very kind of purpose-driven business and that really want to make a change and that in a few years' time could have a huge impact on their local communities. So I think that there's never any harm in reaching out, you know.
Have a chat.
And even if it's not, you know, even if we can't serve your needs, we have a huge partner network that we've been working on building over the last 12 months really, who might be able to help in other ways. So I would always say reach out. The network.
Yeah. Come here to me. Who would you hire in a heartbeat?
This is a tough one. I actually have two, but
you can
do
have
I
two.
Have to? Okay, I can have two.
You
okay,
can have two.
Great.
You can have 10 if you really want.
Okay.
But no one's ever given me 10.
Okay.
Yeah.
I could probably think of five, but I'll stick with two
stick
for the
with
moment.
Two, yeah.
So, funnily enough, they're both finance profiles. They come from the world of finance. So I would go with Brian Hayes and Andrew Wong. So Brian Hayes is very experienced and he has been a fantastic mentor to me over the past few years. He's a non-executive director and chairman of the Bank of Montreal and Booking Holdings. He's worked in Citibank for a couple of decades, I think, and is just so sharp. And I have the best conversations with him. And he doesn't give me an easy time sometimes. He really pulls me up and gives me a grilling, which I think sometimes
very useful.
That's what you need. Yeah. That's absolutely what you need. And I had a great opportunity.
And how did you get in touch with him, or how did that connection happen?
A neighbor of mine, when I started my master's over in IE, said, we were just on the road, and he said, do you know who you should talk to? You should talk to Brian Hayes. And he had been working on projects with Brian. So we met for a coffee, and every couple of months we'll go out and we'll have a nice breakfast together, a nice lunch together, and just chat about, you know, what we're working on and share ideas and perspectives. And he's super open, so you can really talk to him about anything. Yeah, he'll be a great person to come on here as well.
Well, Brian, you are more than welcome. And who's your second choice?
And my second choice is Andrew Wong. So Andrew is somebody who I met over in Madrid. So he had studied a master's in advanced finance, I think, after doing an MBA. And
that's when you get onto the three timetables, is it?
Yeah. Four times if you're really advanced. But Andrew, he's from the States. He is a Forbes 30 under 30 in finance. He's not a kid. I was going to say he's a whiz kid, but he's not a kid.
Well, if he's under 30,
I don't think he's under 30 anymore.
That's
Sorry,
one
Andrew.
Of those things about that, yeah. Is that, you know, you're 30 under 30, but then, you know.
I know.
Everybody says,
to make a 40 under 40, 50 under 50, if they haven't.
They have those.
Yeah.
But what do you and Andrew chat about?
So Andrew, impact investing. He has a really, really, really great finance brain. And because I'm on the business and design side, it is great. And I do have finance profiles around me, but I'd love to have a CFO. I'd love to have Andrew as my CFO.
Is he available?
I'll have to give him a call. I'm going to see him later on this month, so I'll see. But he's over in the States working now. He's set up several different companies. He's worked on, you know, in funds and European funding, and is a really, really cool guy. And just, they're both just easygoing.
And if
nice
Andrew's
people.
Back in, well, does he come to Ireland?
No, he's actually, he's over, well, he's between Spain and the States.
He's if he's coming over to see you to have your, to have the hard chat with you, tell him to come up.
I will. Yeah. I will, absolutely. Cool. Andrew, yeah, I wonder if he'd hire me in a heartbeat. We'll see. That might determine whether or not I invite him
in. I can see what you've done there. That's good. Listen, Laura, thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show. The company is Collectivo. Very easy to remember. Collectivo.
Collectivo.ie.
Yes. Collectivo.ie. We'll get her there. And thank you for joining us on That Great Business Show.
If it's for sale, it's on daft.ie, Ireland's number one property website. Whether you're looking for your first home or planning your next move, make sure you're on daft.ie, the best place to buy or sell in Ireland.
DeFacto, the revolutionary shaving oil, changing the face of shaving. For the smoothest shave of your life, just add water. No more lathering up or cleaning up afterward. Just add a few drops of water and you're ready to go. DeFacto's blend of all natural oils hydrates and protects your skin. No more razor burns or irritation. A spa treatment for your face. Perfect for all skin types and lasts so much longer than traditional foams or gels. DeFacto, a shaving revolution. Just add water. Available from selected pharmacies and from defactoshave.com.
It's all go, let Chrissy know on thatgreatbusinessshow.com.
That Great Business Show.
And that is it from That Great Business Show, episode 158. Great business insights and inspiration, all thanks to our sponsor, daft.ie, Ireland's number one property website. If you're looking for your first home or maybe you're looking to upsize or downsize, make sure to visit daft.ie to find the next place you call home. Sign up for our email updates. They're the ones that Laura was just talking about. And we'll send you your own personal copy of the podcast. The address is thatgreatbusinessshow.com. And that's where to go to or to come from if you want to advertise with us. We record at the Dublin South Podcast Studios, where great sound is always on the menu. Now listen, this is a play on menus again. Head sound chef today is Lee Brennan. Later on, our maitre d', studio manager Peter Rice, will add some secret sauce. Okay, I'll give up now. Make us the best tasting business podcast in the world. Peter Rice is also the man to talk to if you want to record your own podcast here in Dundrum, Dublin. But from me, Conal O'Moran, buichas to you all for listening. Agus slán tom.